Hey there, Shopper Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave, live in the shed from snowy Austin, Texas. Rupert with me is Chris, warm, and definitely has power.
Yeah.
Here. Hey, Chris, how are you
Man,
doing?
Man, Dave, I'm so sorry. 70 plus hours of no power. That's wild. Little snow in Texas really goes south, too. But
and I'll just apologize ahead of time here if I'm bringing any extra rage to the show. Old man complaining energy. It's been a long week, but I'm glad to be here because we are talking about web components and other things. So, Chris, who do we have in the studio?
Yeah, we've been hoping to do a mini series here on what JavaScript is like in 2021 because there's a lot going on. It feels very different than the last time we did a series like this in 2019. So, you know, we talked to the bundler fellas a couple of episodes ago about how that's changing, how ES modules is changing so much in the JavaScript ecosystem. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much other stuff to talk about. Web components. It's always on the mind a little bit because the journey of them has just been so fascinating to follow. And I came across this blog post by Nolan Lawson about styling web components. And that's just a part of the greater story of web components. But at least we could talk about that and then see where it goes. So we got Nolan on the show. How you doing, Nolan?
I'm doing good. Happy to be on the show.
Great. Thanks so much for being here. So that's just one of them. Maybe we'll start there. I think this will help permeate the whole conversation is that you have a web component that you make publicly available to the world that is an emoji picker, right?
Yeah, that's right. I wrote this thing last year. It's called Emoji Picker Element, kind of presumptuously, you know, almost as if it were built into the browser, that's kind of what web components are kind of aiming for, right? Is like, is to kind of, you know, give us these customizable elements that sort of like feel like, you know, the HTML5 days when we got video and audio and we felt great about that. But anyone can build it and you can just drop this little, you know, emoji picker tag onto your HTML and you've got an emoji picker.
Yeah, I've used it as a demo to show exactly that because it's so, you know, you can write one line in your JavaScript that imports this emoji picker element. Because it does need JavaScript. I guess we'll get to that, you know, but that's the nature of the beast for web components at the moment. And then you use the element. It's literally just like angle bracket emoji picker, right? And then all of a sudden, guess what? An emoji picker shows up. You click it and it opens and it's like that thing in Slack or that thing on everybody's different, on Mac OS X, I press what option command space bar and get it. And I'm sure there's one on Linux and Windows as well that give you this component, but that's the native one. This is like one that you built on the web. And it's just obviously tremendously useful. It's like you can imagine web apps needing to add an emoji picker and then being like, why would I spend 2-3 days doing this? Here's one. I mean, I guess that's kind of the goal. Is it in something? Did you need it?
Yeah. So the genesis of this thing was, I maintain a Mastodon client called Pinafore, which is a PWA. And I, you know, Mastodon is basically just an open source Twitter social mm-hmm. media platform. And I knew I needed an emoji picker. In the beginning, I didn't have an emoji picker built into this thing. You know, you could compose statuses, but I would just tell people like, hey, just use the one, like you said, built into your OS, right? Because I like to not build things myself unless I really have to. I like to rely on, you know, the browser or the OS for these kinds of things. But I just kept hearing from people, you know, hey, you know, on certain versions of Linux, they don't have an emoji picker or, you know, certain keyboards mm-hmm. or actually, I mean, a lot of people don't even know that these things exist. I mean, you know, us technologists,
they don't.
Yeah, us technologists, you know, we've got those keyboard shortcuts memorized to launch the emoji picker. But like, I challenge you to ask a non-techie if they know that there even is an emoji picker built into Mac or Windows.
Oh, yeah. If I tweeted right now, oh, my God, I just found out there's an emoji picker on Mac OS and put the keyboard command and posted a screenshot of what shows up when I press the keyboard, it would get like hundreds of likes. They'd be like, oh, my God, I never realized. I promise. It's just you think people know stuff and they don't, you know. So if you used this, you wouldn't need to know anything because there's, you know, there's a little thing and you click it. There's like the learning curve is low.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, is that, I mean, people are just kind of trained now to look for the emoji picker that's built into Slack or built into Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and they each bring their own. And I was really hesitant to build my own. So actually, the first thing I did was actually used a React emoji picker called Emoji Mart, and I bundled it as a web component because my web app is written in Svelte and it already uses some web components. And I just find it to be a really nice kind of mechanism for, you know, including third-party code. But I actually ended up contributing to Emoji Mart a bit. Like, I fixed up some issues with accessibility. But at some point, I just got a little frustrated. I wanted, you know, I was contributing to it so much, and there was a bunch of things I wanted to do. And at some point, I was just like, you know, I'd rather just write my own emoji picker. And actually, the original motivation had nothing to do with web components. It was performance. So I'm a performance engineer, actually. You know, I was dissatisfied with the way all these different emoji pickers out there worked. If you look at basically any emoji picker on NPM or GitHub or wherever, what they're doing is they're downloading the entire like emoji set, like every emoji ever, and all the little, you know, metadata about each emoji, all the skin tones and the descriptions and you know, short codes and all that kind of stuff, and just keeping it in memory.
So they're like 2 megabytes of of text data.
In some formats, it gets up to like almost a megabyte, and it's not like that's ever going to go down. I mean, the Unicode consortium is just adding more and more emoji every year. So my thought process, my first thought process was like, why don't browsers just do this? I really wish there were just an emoji picker built into browsers. But, you know, modulo that, like, what's the next best thing? And so what I did was I implemented it in such a way that it just downloads the emoji once. It stuffs it in IndexedDB, which I still love IndexedDB. I used to contribute to PouchDB, which is a JavaScript database. So I learned a few tricks about IndexedDB in those days. I still think it's fabulously underused on the web. So I just downloaded.
So it's like a cache in a way, or whatever. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a cache, sort of like, you know, similar to local storage or these kind of things. But it's also a full database. Like, it has everything you would expect in there for, like, you know, indexing and secondary indexes and combined indexes. Like, you can do all this fancy database stuff you might do with something like, you know, SQLite. You can just do it right there in the browser. So, you know, it just, the emoji picker that I wrote just downloads the emoji once, caches it in IndexedDB, and then uses IndexedDB as the source of truth. So it's extremely low memory. I did a test in Chrome where I found that emoji picker element actually uses less memory than just loading the JSON object from another emoji picker.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. And so, again, it's just a couple of lines of code to use this thing. I mean, you'd maybe write a couple extra lines of code for, like, what happens when an emoji gets picked or something. But if I'm writing my own personal note-taking app and I want to incorporate an emoji picker, this would be a tremendously good option because it doesn't matter what framework I'm writing in, if any at all. I can just, in a couple of lines of code, now I have an emoji picker. But let's say my note-taking app is called Forest, okay, and it's all greens. Everything is some kind of shade of green. You know, like you open Discord or whatever, it's just like Graysville. Everything is gray. This mine is different. It's green. And then I use the emoji picker element and I open it up and it's got this white background and it's like, oh, jarring. Oh no. I want to be able to style this thing. So enter how do you, the author of emoji picker element, offer styling to me, author of Forest note-taking app, to make this thing green so it doesn't clash in my app? And I guess that's kind of where this, I mean, that's a different setup than your blog post is, but it's similar, right?
Yeah. So that's where we get into to styling a custom element. So, I mean, throwing aside all the technical implementation details of this thing, I decided to expose it as a web component, as a custom element. It wasn't obvious to me how to let people style that thing. I knew that people would probably want to make the emoji a little bit bigger or change how many columns there are in the grid or all these different things. And so that led me to writing this blog post where I kind of enumerate all these different ways that you can style a web component and sort of the strengths and weaknesses of each one.
Yeah. So this is tough. I mean, people out there, if this is interesting to you, it's extremely interesting. You should just read the post, but this is a podcast. We're going to have to do some mouth blogging here, I'm afraid. There are a bunch of options. And so it wasn't obvious to you. I don't think it's obvious to anybody. That's as far as I'll go with web components.
It's, I mean, I'm actually in the process of like turning the podcast player we have on the Shop Talk site into like a web component, like open source. And like this was very timely because I opened a PR and I was basically like, I don't know how to offer styling or custom icons or, you know, things like that. And your post is like just spot on because it just is like, here's kind of the four options and none of them are great. Maybe I'm spoiling that, but you're just kind of like, here's the four options. And, which is like, you know, I like web components. I want to use them. I use them, but the styling story is just brutal, I feel.
We should set up the idea that web components generally, I guess it's always, maybe that's a strong word, but have a shadow DOM in them. I think it might be optional, but generally the point of using a web component is that you get the shadow DOM. I think that's like a strong reason why you would reach for them at all. And and that's because no styling in, no styling out. A little bit like an iframe, if you can picture that. Like that, it's uniquely cool. Like the shadow DOM is a good thing. It makes it so that Nolan can make an emoji picker element. You can use it on your app and not have it be subject to the wilderness of CSS on some other side. Like it's going to look right. If you use Nolan's thing, it's going to look right. But you still need to like be able to reach in there and make changes. So option number one, Nolan could have used while styling this thing, could have just used CSS custom properties all over the place. Could have just been like, how many columns? It's going to be 8, but I'm going to make that a custom property, that 8. Number of columns, 8. What's the background color? I'm going to make it background color white because I'm going to set that. And then just through doing that, there's kind of a styling API, right?
Yeah. So the four main options I kind of came up with, I'll just quickly go through them. And then I want to go deeper into what you're talking about with custom properties. So the first one is custom properties or CSS variables, whatever you want to call them. The second is classes or really attributes, either one. The third is this new CSS shadow parts spec that's now landed in most browsers. Most modern browsers. And then the fourth one is just do whatever you want, DIY, where it's like a hack or a loophole. But I mean, it's kind of a nice, you know, last resort. But the first one, custom properties, that was the one I kind of settled on. At the time I first wrote this emoji picker, shadow parts hadn't landed in all the browsers. And I just kind of looked around at the landscape and I saw that, you know, custom properties worked really well. And so that was kind of the main thing I landed on. But the basic insight is exactly what you said, that, you know, even though shadow DOM is sort of like an iframe, like you have your little self-contained element and, you know, in general, like no styles bleed in, no styles get out. Custom properties are kind of this big exception where, you know, you can just declare, you know, dash dash background white at the root, and that will eventually get down into the web component.
Why that works is anybody's guess to me. Like, why did they decide that CSS custom properties could just penetrate the shadow DOM? I could have seen it the exact opposite way, but whatever.
My guess is because they're inheritable. So there's this other sort of loophole that sometimes surprises people about shadow DOM, which is that any inheritable properties. So in CSS, this would be like, you know, what is it, like font size or color? You know,
sure, color definitely is inherited.
Yeah, and anything that like automatically passes from the parent to the child element, those also pierce into the shadow DOM, which I actually find really useful. Some people don't like it and maybe they'd want to reset it, but I actually kind of like that. And I guess custom properties work the same way.
Yeah, kind of. I now I'm feeling like a lack of knowledge here a little bit. So font family is also inherited, but it's a tricky story, right? Because you'd think, well, it's inherited, then why does my button not inherit it? Well, it's inherited, but the user agent style sheet has a font family on it, so that's winning. And so that's just confusing to know. But if I had a shadow DOM and all inside of it was just a P element, like a paragraph of text, and I set the font family on the body, are you saying that would inherit through the shadow DOM and that paragraph would be the font family I set outside of the?
Yes, absolutely. That is the way it works. That was actually something I discovered kind of like, it kind of delighted me because I was thinking to myself like, you know, oh, what if, you know, the emoji picker is in a page that has, you know, serif versus sans serif font. Like, do I have to give people away?
Fantasy.
Style that?
Yeah.
It's like, but you don't.
Papyrus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's a little news to me. I got to bone up on this stuff. But that's good. So when I say no styles leak in or out, that's not true. Some things that are inherited do leak in, just like anything else does, I guess. But if you were to set, if you were to write like body background red inside your web component in the shadow DOM, that's not going to make the body background red outside of it. That is prevented, that particular type of leak.
Yes, definitely nothing can reach out of the shadow DOM at all. So inside of your web component, whatever you do in there, you know it's not going to affect the page outside. Period. Mm-hmm.
So you went custom properties and just, you know, just through usage of them, you know that those are inherited and thus kind of pierce the shadow DOM, as it were. And so then it's on you as an author. Anything that somebody who's using this emoji picker might want to set, you better make sure to make it use a custom property, because if it doesn't, then they're stuck. So it's like on you to kind of craft that API.
Yeah, that's true. But I actually found that I liked that because I like custom properties and I tend to use them anyway. I like to use variables and, like, you know, define something like, you know, dash dash emoji size, dash dash emoji padding. And then, you know, maybe I'll do some like fancy calcs or something to actually, like, you know, to make that real. But like at the end of the day, I've just got a whole bunch of variables, and then just exposing those to someone else outside of my web component, it just felt really, really natural. Now, the one thing that I ran into that's kind of interesting is, you know, you might think to yourself, okay, well, you know, that's great, Nolan. If I've only got one custom element in my entire web app, I can just, you know, put dash dash background in the root of my entire web app and know that that will affect your emoji picker. But I don't want every web component in the world to be doing that. So I was trying to think.
Yeah, namespace them or something. Yeah.
That's where it gets interesting. Yeah. So what some people do is they will prefix it. You know, so like I could have prefixed like dash dash emoji picker dash whatever, but I actually chose a different option that I thought was really nice that I discovered from actually the Ionic folks are doing this, which is that, so there's this kind of weird mind bending hack, which is that, if you tell your consumers of your web components, hey, don't put your dash dash background at the root of your entire web app, just select my element, just do like emoji picker, open curly bracket, and then put in dash dash background white or whatever you want, then that will only affect that web component. And you don't need any prefixes or namespacing or anything. And the way it works is this weird kind of hack where inside of the shadow DOM, you can target the host with colon host, that pseudo selector. And that is kind of it reaching out a little bit to its, you know, its container inside of the light DOM.
Yep.
But that has lower specificity than in CSS than the user of that web component defining whatever they want on the component. And so it overrides it. So you can set a as an author of a web component, you can set a default inside of the shadow DOM and then let people override it by targeting your element.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
I like that because it seems like the way to go. Like, what? You know, these variables have no meaning at all outside of the component. So to teach people, don't set them too high up. Set them on the component.
No, I like that. I like, because you're like, here, laser into the component if you need to change it. And it's all if you need to change it. Like, hopefully your default styles are decent, you know? But yeah, this is interesting. Like, how far do you go, though? Like, how many custom levers do you offer in...
Well, that's emoji. The thing, isn't it? I think this is perfectly valid. Super cool. If Nolan likes this for the emoji, for this particular component, that's great. More power to everybody that wants to craft this API. But you remember custom properties are properties. They're like, or they're the values to properties, really, because you can't even use it for a selector, right? So it's like, it's limited in what you can do. It's not just giving somebody a hook like, hey, style this part of it however you want to. It's offering a very specific, like, I have opened up this hole for you because you can style this, but nothing else. And that's, you know, that's a choice that every component has to make. But I don't think that it's fair that that choice is like good enough for every web component in the world, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's where we get to maybe the third option, which you can contrast with it, which is the shadow parts, which the idea of shadow parts is basically that when you expose a web component, you can designate parts of it and then let people style that somewhat directly. So like for instance, like take like if you have a custom select element or something, right? Or you know, you might define the parts of those as being like the button that triggers the dropdown or the list box, right?
Sure.
And
yep.
Another part would be the list box, the list of things you can click on, and then another would be the options inside of that thing. You could give a part for each one of those, and then someone could just do, you know, fancy dash select :: part, I think it is, open parens,
the name,
list box.
Yeah. So that's fascinating because it opens up a little bit more than custom properties do, because now you're not limited to just one value of one property. Your list, it's like you're styling one selector and you can do anything you want to it because it just opens up any key values, you know, you want to throw at it, which is pretty cool. It's still on you then, the author, to say, this part is something I want you to style. This part I want you to style. This part I want you to style, but not this one. You know, you have to kind of name every single part that you want to be stylable, which seems like okay, but it feels, the part that feels weird to me about this is like you're reaching in, you're styling that one thing, but you can't, like, let's say you had a header with an H1 in it. Header space H1 is how you'd target that in CSS. You can't give the name. You'd have to give a name to the header and the H1. Like, you can't reach for the part header and then say space H1 and target the H1 inside of it. Like, you have no, there's no, like, descendants traversal at all. Which seems so bizarre to me. It's like, if you're reaching in, like, just reach in. I feel I may be alone in this. This is just me talking. I don't think.
No, I'm with you. I like, wouldn't it be like, hey, you used the magic word part, and now you have total control over styling the component. I don't really care. You know, wouldn't that be, that would be nice. I don't know. But yeah, it doesn't always work like that, you know?
Yeah. So I think like in both of these options, and Nolan, you set it up perfectly. That's a good blog post. I'll say that. It's in both of these options though, you're still like, as the author, it's your job. You know, you'll probably use your readme.md file in your repo to explain what the styling scoop is on this particular web component. It's like on you to not only to author it and ship it and maintain it that way, but to explain it to people, right? You have to document it.
Yeah, that's sort of the strengths and weaknesses of all of these, I think, in general. It's like, I think inherently here, there's a trade-off between like how much, customizability and expressiveness you offer to the consumers of your web component, versus how much you like kind of lock things down and offer like a well-defined API where things don't change from release to release. Like that was one of the issues I had with shadow parts, and why I kind of shied away from it, is that I felt like it kind of exposed some implementation details in a way that kind of made me uncomfortable. Like, you know, as soon as you start attaching the parts to those elements, like people can go hog wild and can add, you know, anything to those. They can, you know, they can mess with the display or position or padding yeah. margin. And, you know, what if I decide that next release I want to put a wrapper, element around that? And because I want to do
too
something.
Too bad. Can't do it.
Yeah. Well, I can do it, but then I'd break people. Yeah. But then on the other hand, like, you know, for a long time, like before Shadow DOM, like people would kind of make web components or like component-esque things. And it was kind of expected you could reach in and do whatever you wanted with them. Right. And it was kind of like, you know, you broke it, you bought it. Like if you did an upgrade and your custom styles didn't work anymore, like you kind of had to just, it kind of came with the territory. So it's trade-offs, I think.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Linode. Linode is great. They've been around forever. One of the first companies in cloud computing 3 years before even AWS was a thing. So they are their own beast in a way. I think this is a pertinent way to describe it. If it runs on Linux, it runs on Linode. You know, you can do anything. These are like, you know, cloud computers that you buy to do anything you want. For example, let's say you're like a gamer. They have all kinds of one-click apps that are gaming related, like you want to deploy your own Minecraft server or Counter-Strike or whatever. You just like click a button and spin it up on your Linode server. So that's kind of cool. But, you know, it's probably mostly for web stuff, you know. It's also notable that Linode is like a step past entry-level hosting, I'd say. So if you want to be like super in control of everything, you know, actually own every detail of your hosting, Linode is a step up, you know, to totally customizable cloud computing. It's VPN friendly, all that stuff. Obviously, they have great, you know, human beings that are going to support you in what you're trying to do. They've got GPU hosting if what you're trying to do is machine learning based. That kind of thing. So again, if it's cloud computing is what you need, if it runs on Linux, it runs on Linode. Go to the link in the show notes. They have a special page just for Shop Talk Show listeners where you get $100 of free credit, which is pretty generous of them, I think. So try that out. Thanks for the support. We skip past option number two. What's that one? It's kind of like just like add a class, basically, right?
Oh yeah. So that one is super interesting to me. It's a little bit different from the other ones because I think it's better for doing kind of theming or variants. Like I ended up using it for dark mode. So the idea is that you know, when you're using the emoji picker, you can do emoji picker class equals dark or class equals light, and then it will just go into dark mode or light mode. And the way this works is that inside of the component, you know, you can target that colon host pseudo selector that corresponds to, you know, your custom element out there in the light DOM. And you can also pass in stuff to that. So you can pass in classes, you can pass in attributes, and you can key off of that and change your styles internally. So I really like that one. I think either attributes or classes are fine there. I think I've seen some frameworks out there using attributes for this, but I think it's nice for theming in particular.
Oh, I think of like video players, you know, light and dark thing are pretty obvious, or small, medium, big, you know, but like video players, you know, like sometimes it's like new, radical, retro, YouTube, you know, like mm-hmm. You have these kind of fixed set of themes that it supports, you know, and if those don't work for you, well, cool. You just need to roll your own or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that's a interesting way to approach it.
And it's in the same boat. It's like, you got to document that the reason I'm dwelling on that a little bit is cause like it feels a little new that you'd have to do that. I feel like you could in the day you could ship a jQuery slider or something, and you don't have to be like, here's the HTML I used, because you just look and you see the HTML they used, and if you want to style it, you just style it. I don't know that was good or bad, because, you know, they weren't protected in the shadow DOM and were maybe less generally useful because you couldn't just plop them in anywhere you wanted. It had these like very specific dependencies that were. So I just mean that like it feels like HTML and CSS and the DOM are kind of this self-documenting styling API already. That's what CSS is. It's a styling API. Shouldn't I be able to just look in the shadow DOM and be like, look at this. This is what this author did. I'm choosing to intentionally write some syntax that reaches in there to style it. I feel like that should be one of the options. I don't think any of these other options are bad, but an option to me should be reach in, do work.
Like, you feel like web shadow DOM specifically, or web components kind of break the contract or the expectation.
Yeah, I feel slighted. I feel like I should be able to do that. But Nolan writes, option four kind of is that, right? In a way.
Yeah. So like,
just go in there.
Yeah. So option four, I call it the escape hatch. And I like having it there because it's kind of like, you know, if none of these styling APIs that I expose as a component author satisfy you, you know what? You can always just use this one, which is that in open shadow DOM, at least, so there's two types of shadow DOM. There's open and closed. But as far as I can tell, most people are using open. But in open shadow DOM, there is nothing to stop you from just grabbing that element with JavaScript and then doing element.shadowroot. And then once you get that, you just have the keys to the kingdom and you can inject style tags and do whatever you want. So you could just inject a style tag in there that then applies inside of the shadow DOM.
Right. So I chuck a style tag in there and now like I said, I have keys to the kingdom. I really do just can put any CSS in there and it will apply as I expect it to. And I kind of like it. I mean, ergonomically, it's not beautiful, but at least I'm not hampered by anything else. I have what I want. I can write styling to my heart's content in there. And I don't know, as a CSS person like me, that feels right. It feels like that's what I want to do. But that's funny. So that's the case. That's four options. I don't even know if I'm sure if we really stretched, we could find more ways to to style web components.
You have like slot ID style or something and pass a style block in a slot or something? Because that's another part of web components.
Oh, a slot. Like, yeah, you could do that.
You write light DOM inside the emoji picker, so open emoji picker brackets, and then style tag, go buck wild, change things.
Feels a little dangerous because that slot would apply like before the Java, it would apply that CSS then to the parent page too temporarily, you know?
Oh, well, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I guess you could host or something.
I think that actually doesn't work because I think slots render to the light DOM.
Ah. Nards.
They already thought of that. They cut you off at the pass.
I'm going to blame Alex Russell.
Funky monkey. But you could still like inner HTML, like grab the contents of it and apply it inside if you wanted to somehow, you know, probably be three lines of code.
Yeah.
This is fun. So, but I wouldn't blame anybody who's looking at web components is like, where's the docs on like how to style it? They're like, well, there isn't any because it's weird. There's something that I totally don't understand. Maybe you do. If you do or don't, let me know, Nolan. But this thing of constructible style sheets, have you followed that little saga at all?
Yeah, I have looked into that. I think it doesn't, it neither solves the problems that we've been talking about, nor does it make them worse. It's just a different way to work with style sheets in web components and in the DOM as a whole.
That makes me sad.
Are you telling me they're standardizing something that doesn't quite solve the problem? just one more question. It's me being web standards Columbo.
So you actually went with the CSS custom properties, right? That's what you actually shipped.
Yeah, that's the main one I went with. Because me as you know, as a component author, really just as a you know, library author or package author, you know, I always tend towards wanting to define like a very strict API that does one thing and like has one happy path and doesn't like kind of let you go hog wild. Like I don't like to expose a lot of the private implementation details. So for me, having the custom properties was really the sweet spot because I could just have these custom properties that do exactly what I wanted to do, you know, --emoji --padding. --num --columns, whatever. And like internally, I can, you know, express that however I want with CSS grid or with, you know, whatever. It just kind of fits my mode of thinking.
I agree. I think it's nice. I think that's what I would pick too generally, or if I was in your case here specifically.
And you'd mentioned in your post, this is what y'all are using on Lightning web components, the Salesforce web component library, is that right?
Yeah. So I work at Salesforce. I'm actually on the performance team, but I'm on the performance team of what we call UI platform, which is basically, yeah, we build this JavaScript framework that runs on Salesforce. It's called Lightning. And we build this thing called Lightning Web Components. And yes, like one of the main strategies, if you go and inspect a Lightning page, is that there's custom properties that are like dash dash LWC dash something. So it tells you
spacing small is I'm looking at one spacing small.
Yeah. And so I think in that case, like the prefixing makes a lot of sense because it's a design system. And so at the core, there are these design tokens and you want them to, you know, things that say like, you know, what the width of, you know, icons should be or what the font size should be, all these kind of things. And you want it to be consistent across all the components in an app, right? And so in that case, you want it to pierce, you want to define it at the root and have it go and trickle down into every single component everywhere and be consistent. And so in that case, you can't use the Ionic trick I was talking about where you define, where you just like target that exact web component. So I think in that case, having the prefix is makes a lot of sense.
Very interesting.
So let's say, are you saying your Mastodon client is in Svelte?
Yes.
So you, if you want to use this emoji picker in Svelte, is there any complication at all? Let's say my thing is in React. Will I have any what's the story of, you know, these kind of raw web components and outside frameworks?
Well, that's a really interesting question. It's, you know, the way I designed it, like I use Svelte because like it compiles down to be really, really tiny. And I didn't want most people to even know that implementation detail or care about it. You know, like you can just, if you use the emoji picker, like you can use it inside of a Vue app or a React app or whatever you want. If you use it inside of a Svelte app, actually, you're just going to be using it as if it were a custom element. There's no like Svelte-y, you know, API surface that it's exposing. And I actually kind of like that way of thinking. Like, you know, lit element is doing this as well, right? Where you can like, you know, have lit components inside of your React app or your Vue app. You know, there's even for things like React, like I mentioned earlier, you can wrap React components in a web component. There's a tool out there called Remount that'll do this. I like to think of web components as being like this sort of glue layer or this, you know, what's a container structure, right? Sort of like Docker containers or just our shipping containers, right? Like you want to give like this one universal a format where you can just like package something up and hand it off to someone and they can use it. And it works basically the same everywhere. And you don't have to know about the gnarly implementation details. So that's kind of the way I think about it.
So there's almost nothing you'd have to think about, or there isn't in Svelte. I don't know if there is in React. I feel like that was like a talking point for a while, is that your web component might not work how you expect it does in your React app. So it's not that we don't support it. It's just that it's weird. And I kind of forget why it was weird, but it should be okay now. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine what's so wrong about it, right? It renders emoji picker on the page. I don't know what could go wrong.
Well, yeah, I've actually seen that there was a React app out there that was using my emoji picker. So like it is totally doable. Yeah.
Oh, I don't mean to, does it work the other way? Like, I know you can use the web component in a Svelte app, but like, I know like Svelte can output web components technically or whatever, but like, is that a process or does that actually work or something? You know, that's kind of been my question. Like, can you then like output a Svelte thing as a web component and then just use it in like regular HTML, like an 1180 site or something?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing actually. So like, yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Oh, okay.
Now,
okay.
I think what Chris was getting at is that there are some complications when you're using a web component inside of a framework. And there's a great site. I think someone at Google put it together called Custom Elements Everywhere, which is basically kind of a set of benchmarks, or it's kind of like the, you know, HTML5 test of JavaScript frameworks. And it basically tells you like, hey, if you're using this JavaScript framework, can you just grab a web component and just like plop it on your page and use it in a framework compatible way? And does it feel ergonomic with that framework? What it's not saying is like, and by the way, React gets kind of a bad score on this test, but that doesn't mean that like you shouldn't use web components with React. Like it just means you might have to like get your hands dirty with using refs in React rather than doing things in kind of an ergonomic React-y way. Like for instance, with handling events or passing in props, things like that.
I think of like, when I think of React, I think, well, it's in charge of re-rendering things and such. So like it might, I have no control over this. React might just decide that it's going to re-render some area of the app because some prop changed or something. And that means my web component is going to re-render too, which means its own little on mount or whatever it is going to run and all that. Like it may not just be, maybe a web component isn't designed or prepared to just be re-rendered as much as React might going to do it to it. Is that one of the things you have to think about?
So I don't know. I'm not sure about the details about React in particular, but I think what you're talking about is something like, you know, let's say you have a custom element inside of a React app and you have an attribute on it, and you're switching that attribute based on some React state, right? So from the web component author's point of view, what's going to happen is you're going to get this callback called, it's called attribute changed. And you can handle that inside of your web component however you want. You don't have to like fully re-render the entire thing unless React under the hood is going to like, I don't know, remove it from the DOM and add it back into the DOM entirely, which I don't think they would do.
I want to remind you that CodePen has pro plans. CodePen being, you know, the company that I'm the co-founder of. So we don't get a chance to shout it out enough on this show, perhaps. But if you go to codepen.io/pro, it'll take you to a page that like explains all the stuff that you get if you're just like an individual developer and decide to go pro. Some of the big ones are privacy. So if you're building a pen, you can flip it to private or turn on a setting that everything you save is just private by default, if that's just how you want to roll. And something to know about that is that, let's say you're working on something, you don't intend for it to be private forever, but just for some time. The moment then that you flip it back to public, that's the moment that it like enters the streams of socialness on CodePen. So it's not based on the creation date, it's the first moment that it went public. So that's kind of a just a nice thing to know, that even if you work on something for like a month or something, it's that first flip to public that that gets it into those social feeds. And then there's other stuff like uploading files. We have a very fancy asset hosting system that not just hosts your files, but let's say they're images, you can like resize them on the fly and serve them in the automatically correct format for the browser and crop it and re-upload it. It has all kinds of like abilities for dealing with that, not to mention that they're CDN hosted and super fast and all that. That's just two of the features of CodePen Pro. So we'd love your support. And, you know, it's also mandatory. So sign up right now. Okay, so that's interesting. So there's stuff to think about, and there's resources to look at when you're doing it. Kind of good to know. And then does it feel like an okay? Because you were saying it works. When I say the other way around, I mean you could, if you wanted to, write a web component in Vue, and then ship it, and you know, package up Vue inside of that web component and use it in a different framework because it's so kind of like isolated internally. It seems weird because, like, I don't know. I think we're ingrained to think, like, you should definitely not ship multiple frameworks on one website. But it's isolated, so, like, is that okay now or something?
That's an excellent point. And definitely, you know, I'm a performance guy, so if I didn't address that, I wouldn't be doing my job. So I think it's totally fine to bundle it up inside. I mean, that's what I'm doing. Like, Svelte, you know, has a runtime. And so I am basically bundling that runtime inside of the component, distributing it that way. But I also offer a mode where you can have a shared Svelte dependency, so you don't have to include Svelte twice. And so I have like, you can do require emoji picker element /Svelte, and it just gives you the one that doesn't duplicate Svelte in case you're already using Svelte. And in my case, it saves like 10 kilobytes minified, so it's not very much.
I don't know. That seems significant, especially because it's 10 kilobytes that has to execute.
Oh, yeah. It's not nothing. Yeah. And I could see this strategy becoming more widespread in a world. What I would like to see is a world where if I want to use an emoji picker, if I want to use a this or a that, I'm not going to NPM and typing in, you know, emoji picker Vue or emoji picker Angular or emoji picker React. Like, I think it's silly to rebuild these things over and over and over and over again in every single framework. Like, I think there should just be like one good one that exposes a web component interface, and I can use it. I don't care if it's implemented in Vue or React or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, in this magical future I'm describing, you could imagine a bad performance situation where I have, 100 web components, and some of them are using Vue, and some are using Angular, and some are using React, and it's duplicated every single time. But if they use this strategy that I mentioned, where you have a mode where it can share the framework, then you don't have all this duplication. And you're loading React and Angular and Vue together, but not every single web app. I'm gonna get lambasted for saying this as a performance guy, but not every single web app out there has to be as fast as possible, get a perfect 100 score on Lighthouse or whatever. Some people are building.
You heard it here first, folks. Tell your bosses you don't need 100 on Lighthouse. Mm-hmm.
Nolan's performance not, engineer you're said not, that. You're not a stranger to controversy. So okay, that's kind of interesting to know. And you're also talking to Dave is here. Dave, you've been working on this tab stuff. That's the same spirit, isn't it? There should be one good one for tabs, and anybody
let's just make one good one, and then we all rally around it and we say, please use this one. I go ahead and make your other one, but don't just use this one. That's what I'm trying to, and I've settled on generic components by Pascal. But I have this concern too about if somebody writes this in Lit and somebody writes this in, Stencil and somebody writes this in Vaadin or whatever, I'm going to have 15 sneaky frameworks. They're all small because they're all web component frameworks, 1, 2, 5K or something. But if I'm using 3 elements, that's not a big deal. But if I'm using 15 elements, that's going to add up, because it's all kind of bundling or minified into its own little doodad. Hopefully it shares code or I can bundle it myself, but that seems like a problem for me. I think it gets tricky too. Cause if I'm using, let's say Lightning Button or something from Lightning Web Components, right? Sure, it's going to come with a little bit of stuff from, it may not be nothing, but it may be small, but it's going to come with some stuff from the overall Lightning system, whether it's some styles or some behaviors or something from Lightning that, I'm just kind of bit by bit bloating up my site. So that's what I kind of worry about, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. Granted, it's still 1/10 of a React app, so maybe I'm doing okay, but I don't know. Those are the stuff I kind of worry about. I wish we had less diversity, but I don't know. Web component people are more the better. So I don't know. I don't know what to think.
You make a good point. I think it's a little bit situation dependent. For instance, with the emoji picker, I would expect most people to be lazy loading this thing. It's typically the use case is you have, a text box or something, and there's a little smiley face button, and you click the smiley face button and that launches the emoji picker, right? So you can just wait until that moment to import the emoji picker.
Yeah.
Or you would think of something WordPress has Gutenberg, and isn't that built on top of React, but you can use it outside of WordPress?
It is, but it's also, there's a native app version of it too. I think the story is a little complicated, but yeah, React is part of that story.
Okay, well, let's just say a rich text editor or something like that. That's another thing where, you can just kind of lazy load it on the client side. And the frameworks are getting better about being smaller. If you don't like React's size, you can use Preact. I think Vue 3 is even smaller than Vue 2. It's probably getting to the point where your biggest bloat is going to be coming from something like Moment.js or your polyfills or something along those lines. But it, like I said,
or even situation dependent. Your own code, right? like you just block the main thread by doing big computation too soon or something. Yeah.
I like how easy it's getting in JavaScript too. You could have the smiley face, add an event listener to it of click. That event listener's function can be async. And then inside that, you can do an await import and pull the import of this thing off of CDN. It's just a couple of lines of code in here, So when Nolan says, just lazy load it. It's not hard anymore. JavaScript itself kind of helps with that in a big way. Are we stoked about top level awaits now too? Is everybody excited about that?
I'm sure I'll break something doing it. Wait while.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that might get tricky. It doesn't return a promise, though. I think that would throw.
Oh, okay. Okay.
that's cool. So, okay. So we talked about the styling of web components to some degree, but that's just one part of the overall story. There's this whole story of like how you mount and use them that, you know, I know Dave's been interested in for a long time. And then there's like, what about accessibility? You have an even more recent blog post about how focus is handled in web components, or specifically the Shadow DOM. What's that all about? Is it just as messy as styling?
Yeah, that's another case where I seem to run up against all these hard edges in web components and the Shadow DOM. And I don't know if it's just because like
hard edges like styling and focus management. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you blog it, but other people just throw their hands up and don't do it. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. Well, I think it's maybe because I maybe look too deeply in this kind of stuff. Like, you know, if you stay on the happy path and they're like, you know, here's how to do a hello world and like everything's great. But when you look into the details, yeah, it's always hairier than it seems at first. It's always been that way with the web, right?
Indeed.
But yeah, in this case, so this is a very specific problem, which is that, so I care a lot about accessibility. So another thing I wanted to do with this emoji picker was make it accessible from the start. Like I actually kind of thought about like the semantic structure of the thing before even deciding like, you know, what DOM elements to use, things like that. And it gets really tricky when you have Shadow DOM because of certain cases, like especially with keyword management and focus traps. So if you've ever worked with a modal dialog before, an accessible modal dialog, you know that, you know, it launches the modal dialog. And then now the focus is trapped inside of that dialogue. So if I, as a user, right. I keep pressing tab, right? It'll just like kind of cycle around all the stuff inside of that modal dialogue, right? It's not
very hard to pull off nicely, but yes, that is a requirement of accessibility to do that.
Yes. And I don't know how much detail exactly you want to go into this, but basically there's like a bunch of libraries out there on NPM or GitHub that you can find for doing focus traps and focus management and accessible dialogues. And unfortunately, a lot of them just don't take the Shadow DOM into consideration, which means that like in the case of something like the emoji picker, you just wouldn't be able to tab into any of the elements inside of the picker. Like you wouldn't be able to tab through the emoji. You wouldn't be able to tab to like the search box or the skin tone dropdown, anything like that. And so basically I wrote a blog post where I said like, this is how you should be doing it. You really got to roll up your sleeves and do this. It's not fun. I hope that browsers fix it someday.
Yeah. I mean, ideally we just get inert and we just don't have to deal with it. I don't know if you follow that saga a little bit, but it seems like if you could just put inert on the body and put not inert on the dialogue, you've got yourself a focus trap and two lines of code, and that is a good thing. But I know what you mean. Okay, so that's interesting. Of course they don't. You know, that's funny that, you know, the Shadow DOM introduces these challenges. Focus, I'm surely not being the only one. You know, I'm sure there's all kinds of libraries that are just didn't even consider the existence of the Shadow DOM.
Oh yeah, like this. It just the Shadow DOM just breaks so many web developer assumptions. Like it breaks. Well, I say breaks, but like let me be a little more gentle about it. It redefines. It redefines some aspects of the DOM. So for instance, like traversal, like doing queries, document.query selector all button, right? Like you would expect that's going to give you every button on the page. But with Shadow DOM, it doesn't, because that's an internal implementation detail of that component and it's hidden inside the Shadow DOM, so you can't get it. And there are ways to traverse it when you're using Open Shadow DOM, but it is definitely a lot more getting your hands dirty kind of thing. So, I mean, you can just imagine, you know, lots of libraries and frameworks written for the pre-Shadow DOM era that didn't take that into consideration and thought they could just, you know, use a query selector all and have it work. And it doesn't, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. So is the I think most people can imagine an emoji picker where you click a thing and it opens up an emoji picker, and then you select an emoji and then an event fires, which you listen for and which to use that emoji somewhere. is a pretty JavaScript specific thing, right? So the no JavaScript story for an emoji picker is nothing, basically, right? Is that okay? I'm alluding to your, you know, and I already alluded to the controversy from 2016, where you're like, it's 2016 websites. It's okay to build a website where JavaScript is required. We don't have to dig all into that, but that I'm sure you lived through it once. Do you think about that type of stuff with this emoji picker too? Should it have a no JavaScript fallback where it says like, there's supposed to be an emoji picker here, or use your browser's emoji picker or something? Or is it like, whatever, just don't show anything?
Oh, it's funny. When you said I was no stranger to controversy, I wasn't even thinking of that. I was thinking of when I wrote Safari as the new IE back in like 2015.
Mm.
Which
So you're
still accurate.
So you're
maybe a little strongly worded. Yeah, I might have walked it back a little bit since then.
Where's Flexbox Gap Safari? Wow.
But yeah, let's not even get into that because. I'm a member of the W3C now. Actually, I worked at Microsoft Edge before my current job, so I got more involved in browser standards. You know, I work with WebKit folks at Apple, and they're lovely people. So that was a long time ago. But yes, I did also talk about whether websites should work without JavaScript or not, and that whole controversy. I think, you know, where I would land nowadays on that with web components is I think it's very situation dependent. Again, like you mentioned with the emoji picker, there really isn't a story of like server-side rendering and works without JS. Like, it kind of doesn't really make sense for something like an emoji picker, nor would it for something like a, you know, rich text editor or fancy date picker or things like that. But you know, I think Rich Harris wrote a post a year ago, I think, called Why I Don't Use Web Components, and he mentioned this problem of not having server-side rendering, not having a way to express web components completely declaratively. And he gave the example of, I think, a Twitter share this link, right? Where, like, mm-hmm. if you were doing it without web components, you'd have just a bog standard anchor element, which you'd then enhance with JavaScript. And so if the JavaScript didn't load for whatever reason, like, that anchor element is going to be fine. With web components, you would have, you know, my fancy thing tag, which if the JavaScript didn't load, it wouldn't work. So I think
that they just put the anchor tag inside that, though?
Well, that's where it gets tricky, is that you can put the anchor tag inside of it if you're using light DOM, but not shadow DOM. But that is actually getting fixed now. So there is now a new proposal from folks on the Chrome team for declarative shadow DOM, where you would actually be able to do server-side rendering of the shadow DOM. And so that would potentially solve that problem.
Yeah. But
isn't the template like that? The template tag, you know, it's like you can use that and put a bunch of HTML inside and it doesn't render. So there's some precedent for like chucking a bunch of HTML on the page that isn't rendered. It's just used later by something else.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, this proposal uses the template tag. It reuses it.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
But if you're using the element 10 times, like a list or something, you have to use the template tag 10 times. So there's,
that's what server side rendering
is. It's not my favorite syntax. So yeah. I don't know. I think they're not going to win the hearts and minds with that proposal, but that's just me. So, you know, they solve a problem, but not elegantly. That's my opinion. You know, hot take, spicy. I'll fall on the grenade. No one, you don't have to.
That's fair. I mean, here's the thing is, like, I totally understand, like, all the developer hate towards web components and all the controversy about it, because, like, browsers move slow and web standards move slow. And, like, you know, as soon as something ships, you can already think of 10 things wrong with it that you wish they would fix. And they're, you know, and you look at the discussion for fixing it, and the Apple people are arguing with the Mozilla people, are arguing with the Google people, and you're like, why can't you just ship something? But I think where I would land on this is I would still bet on web components. And the reason for that is that, you know, web components have a sort of unfair advantage, which is that they're built into the browser. So anything else they're competing with, like, you're going to have to go through that extra step of loading the thing and reading some documentation. Oh, this was version 2 and now they're on version 3 and everything's broken. And you just don't have that with web standards. So I'm pretty sure that a lot of these problems with web components in terms of styling, in terms of, you know, accessibility, all this kind of stuff, it's all going to shake out eventually. And I think it's going to be great.
I agree. You can't think, even if they're bad, which I think there's plenty of bad stuff about them, they're still going to win. They're going to win the long game because they're built in. So they win.
Just like Object. Just kidding. No. Hey, all right. Well, we should probably wrap it up here. But Nolan, thank you for coming on the show. For people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that?
They don't need to give me any money, but my blog is nolanlawson.com. I'm also on GitHub and Mastodon, and there are links to that on my blog. But yeah, I'd say, you know, subscribe via RSS, read my blog.
You got a good blog and a good Mastodon instance, toot.cafe. So it's good. So I should spend more time there, to be honest. But yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I think this has been educational. I guess, if you were to say, is web components a 2021 JavaScript technology I should be using? Is that a yes or a no?
I'd say yes. And if you're not using it, you probably are and just don't realize it. You know, just look in, you know, open up the element inspector and you'll probably find a shadow root in there somewhere that you didn't know about.
Okay. Well, that sums it up. All right. I'm going to say thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to start favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And check out our Discord. Patreon.com/shoptalkshow, I believe. And so it's still so new, but the people are in there, and so it's getting very exciting. So but yeah, come on, join in. We'd love to have you. Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Patreon.com/shoptalkshow.